Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
It's all about the macro productions.
Lashback Fridays here on Macro Aggressions, taking you back to June 15th, 2024, causing havoc for the New World Order with David Sanchez. If you want to turn some of your soon-to-be-worthless fiat currency into actual money, then check out my friend Tony Arterburn with Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. Set up a monthly buy with Wolfpack subscription as low as $50 or roll over your IRA and 401k into physical precious metals. You can even use your Bitcoin to make purchases. Go to macroaggressions.gold, promo code macro for free silver. Now please enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macro Aggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble or listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate it. If you haven't rated the show yet and you think we've earned 5 stars, we would certainly appreciate it. That's not an ego trip, an algo trip. That's the way they set it up. So we'll play their game as long as we have to. The new website, macroaggressions.io, you can find out everything that you need about what I'm doing with books and podcasts and information about our sponsors. Speaking of that, our newest sponsors, Privacy Academy. We had the father-son team on here, the Metters. They're doing outstanding work. They've built a system that you should take a look at. It'll be the links in the description and also on the website for Privacy Academy. They have a course that you can take that'll really teach you the ins and outs of what's going on in our technological world, how we're getting spied on, what we can do to prevent it, how we can, you know, some of that low hanging fruit that we can knock out of the way real easy. It's not going to intimidate you. If you're not tech savvy, it's okay, because they dumbed it down for people like me so that we can understand it. So if you're interested, Privacy Academy is the place to go. Just check the link in the description. Take a look, see what you think. Also, thanks to Legal Shield, they've been in business for 50 years. Inside the United States and Canada. They'll get you access to an attorney in your area for a very reasonable price. How's a dollar a day work? It's pretty good. $30 a month will get you access to an attorney. You can get all kinds of legal documents taken care of. If you don't have a last will and testament, if you don't have a power of attorney, financial, medical, whatever, you got to get it. You're an adult. You can't be putting this stuff off, but you don't want to spend a couple $1,000s. I understand that. So do this. Go to the website that they built. specifically for the show, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com, and go check it out for yourself. You'll find that they have all kinds of things available there for identity shield, small business plans, documentation for people that carry guns. All that stuff is over there. Just go take a look, read up about it. It's on the website. You can find it at macroaggressions.io. You can find the link to Legal Shield, or you can just go to don'tgetpushedaround.com. Well, now that we got the business out of the way, I'm ready to party. Big thanks to Jeff Warnock, our mutual friend who set this up. We don't talk about music enough on this show, as we should. I love music. I don't get into it as much. But Jeff introduced me to somebody that I think we're all going to want to talk about. And of course, they have a new album coming out. Ladies and gentlemen, from Havoc, David Sanchez. David, what's cooking? Good to see you.
Howdy. I'm very happy to be here, and big shout out to Jeff for connecting us. I've been listening to your podcast for a while. I'm happy to talk to you.
I'm glad you're here, and I wonder about this. I was in Mexico earlier in February with one of the guys that I met at the American Liberty Awards, a guy named Five Times August. He's a singer. He's been doing a lot of work against the vaccine mandates. And he's been very vocal about pointing out to people in the music industry on Twitter. He does a lot of outstanding trolling, and he's been calling these people out, and he's, for pushing the vaccines for the, for concerts and whatnot, and getting on board with that agenda. It made me think, though, how much of this music world is even aware of this stuff. I mean, I can envision a scenario where you're just trying to play the best songs and trying to get the word out to the public as best as you can, and dealing with music industry assholes is never fun, but you've got to do that. And it's like, then at the very end, the last thing that you have to do is like, oh yeah, by the way, I should probably understand how the world actually works. It sounds like it might be down low on the list of priorities, but Jeff talked to me about you and you guys. You guys have an awareness of what's going on. Is this super rare in the music industry for people to understand kind of what we're up against these days?
I think a lot of artists do understand, but many of them aren't as vocal about it as I am. I'm pretty on the nose when it comes to lyrics. And the main reason is just because I don't want to mince words or be misinterpreted. I want people to understand what I'm saying, because I think civilization is marching straight towards a cliff, and it's soon going to be a time where it's either we're going to fall to our death or, spread our wings and fly, so to speak. And I think that the time is short, and I don't think there's time to have people sitting around pontificating about what is this song about. I want to say the thing, and I started changing my lyrics towards this direction probably when I was about 20, maybe 21 or something like that, because I had started reading books and started using my brain a lot better and opening my eyes to how things operate in this society. And it made me want to sing about something that matters. I didn't want to sing. A lot of metal bands sing about wizards and spells and demons and the devil and death and war. Right. And we have some songs that are about ghosts and war and things like this, but I didn't want to do more of that stuff. I wanted to speak about something that actually matters to me.
Yeah. Well, what about the rest of the guys in the band? I mean, this is you write the songs, you write the lyrics. Do you write the music as well, or is that a collaborative effort? I mean, at some point, you're the one who said, the words are coming out of your mouth, so they're tied to you. Does the band get a say in this, or is this one of those things where they go, listen, man, this is your, these are your words coming out of your mouth, so you say it however you want to say it?
It's pretty much that way. Not everyone subscribes to what I'm saying 100%, but
oh, really?
Songwriting wise, a lot of it is me, but lyrically, it's for the last several records, it's been me on just about 100% of the lyrics. So, but yeah, you were asking about if other artists see the world this way. I feel like a lot of them do, but they're afraid to say it. Or there's a lot of these people that appear on the surface like they understand, but then as the last few years have revealed, some of them, a lot of them, didn't actually mean what they were saying.
Yeah, for sure. We saw that with like Pete Parada getting thrown out of Offspring, and we saw a lot of bands that went kind of authoritarian all of a sudden. You know, we have questions about what killed Taylor Hawkins. There was rumors that he was pressured into taking the vaccine when he didn't really want to, and then goes to Brazil and doesn't come home. And of course, you never want any of that stuff to happen. You're not trying to make your point by wishing people in bands are dropping dead or anything like that. But it was a fact, and we saw it, and we saw a lot of this happen. We saw these bands that had gone from like, hey, we're just punk, we're just having a good time, or we're just writing about, you know, bitches and hoes and doing all this stuff. And then, you know, it's all fun and games. And then when it came time to like, okay, well, we're going to have a concert. Oh, vaccine passports are mandatory. And you go, what? Is this coming from your is this coming from your management? Is this coming from the venue? I remember seeing a show during the kind of the COVID insanities at Red Rock and thinking, oh, I wonder what their policy is. And what I found out was that they said, we make it policy towards vaccines, I should clarify. They said it was the artist's choice. Is that, did you ever have instances where you guys were playing during these COVID years where they said vaccine status is up to the artist?
So I work at a bunch of the venues in Denver, and you know, some of them were doing that kind of thing where you needed to show your papers, please, to go to the concert. You must show your papers. Mm-hmm. And I was never down with any of that. And as far as playing during all of this lockdown time, Havoc didn't play. A lot of places were requiring vaccine passports and things like that. And I had no interest in taking part in any of that. It goes against everything that I believe in and have been screaming my head off about for 20 years. So we kind of took a few years off, and we waited until bands started going out more and more to you know, test the waters and make sure the coast was clear before we went out. Because even when they started opening things back up, bands were like having to cancel because things were so wishy-washy there for a while. But yeah, I mean, there was a bunch of shows that I missed when shows first started coming back because they were requiring documentation that you took the sauce. And I mean, any of these bands that were singing anti-authoritarian lyrics and stuff, but then were on board with all that shit, I'm honestly grateful for them showing their true colors, because now we actually know who's who. We know who meant what they said and who was an absolute freedom poser, as I call them.
Right. Yeah, for sure. When you guys, I remember my buddy's band back in the 90s was, you know, pretty heavy, and they had a ton of success in Europe. Europe loved it. They went to Europe every year and toured. Do you guys have that same appeal in Europe? Are you guys really welcome in Europe? And if so, like, how is the touring process there? Because I know that God knows that it seems like every country's got maybe a different take on things. And how'd you guys navigate that?
Yeah, so we do well in Europe. We're actually gearing up to go there for the first time since pre-lockdowns this summer. Oh. We're going to be out there playing some festivals, so we'll see how it goes. But I've talked to other musician friends of mine about going over there, and they said everything's pretty much back to normal, which is so funny. This disease that was, you know, the new plague that was supposed to kill everybody never went away. It's still here, but everything's back to normal, and everyone just wants to like close their eyes and plug their ears and act like none of it ever happened.
So you're aware of what's going on, and your lyrics reflect that. And people that listen to, you know, that get into it and like, I want to understand what this song is about. They're hearing it, right? So they're getting your take on this. Does that translate? Is then by kind of default the audience more likely to be inclined with your way of thinking, or are they just there sort of for the instrumentation and maybe not necessarily the lyrical composition?
Honestly, I think there's a lot of both. But I definitely get messages from people and emails and stuff, and people come up and talk to me in person when we're on tour about how much they love the band because of what it stands for and what I'm talking about in the lyrics. So there's definitely some people that don't care for what I'm saying lyrically and are just there for the music, and that's fine. And there are some other people that like us way more because of what is being said in the lyrics. And I think it's worth noting too, well, today is actually the anniversary of our last album coming out. It came out May 1st, 2020. And I'm not sure when this is going to come out, but it's May 1st, 2024 right now. Yeah. And the lyrics on that record, a lot of people thought they were about lockdowns and stuff because we had been locked down for about 6 weeks at the time that the record came out. And a lot of people were like, wow, you know, this is really on the nose with what's happening. Like, no, this was all recorded in 2019. It's just, it's unfortunate that all of these lyrics about tyrants and authoritarianism happen to map onto reality a little too closely. So I'm not a prophet. Yeah. It's just things kind of went south in a direction that I suspected they would at some point. So, yeah, a lot of people thought that our last record, V, was about lockdowns and shit, but it was all done before that. But there's songs on that record, like Fear Campaign. The lyrics in the song are, they use fear to control you. And, you know, this this was released right in the middle of everyone being stuck in their house watching Tiger King on Netflix.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's funny. But then again, if you think about 2019, they were using fear to control you back then, too. It wasn't, it just 100%. It just hadn't turned into this COVID dilemma. I remember being at Anarchapulco in middle of February 2020. It was 3 weeks before COVID kicked off. And one of the things that they were doing there, they had like a the term coronavirus was kind of, you know, making a big thing. And they were just goofing on it there. They had Corona tents set up. They were selling beer there. They were giving out masks and things like that. So they were kind of, everyone said, "Well, God, did you guys know it was going to be as crazy as it was?" It's like, no, we didn't. We didn't really actually know it was going to be that crazy. But we understand who these people are. We understand that they're authoritarian scumbags, and they want to control you, whether that's COVID or whether it's something else. I mean, the idea that you're writing about tyrannical leaders is just as relevant in 2020, 2019, or anytime. 1719. You know what I mean? That's a concept that's been around for a while. So is that kind of your niche? Is it sort of like a, I don't know, maybe like wake the fuck up, anti-authoritarian type of music, like pay attention to what's happening, people, or else, you know, you're going to be in trouble. Is that sort of the theme?
Yeah, that's a lot of it. And I try to put a spin on all of the lyrics that's positive. A lot of the lyrics are about very negative things, but we'll have some sort of a twist on the lyrics that's like, here's a solution, or here's how we can avoid this. I try to make it a positive thing. These are things that boil my blood, make me really angry, but I try to spin it into something that's good and not just me complaining about everything.
Are there other bands like that you connect with out on the road? Like you guys see each other and you go, "Hey, I know. Oh yeah. Yeah. We're all kind of on the same wavelength." I mean, are there other groups out there? I mean, are there bands out there that are like in the closet about how they feel about this authoritarianism? I mean, or do they just go along to get along and you guys sort of, you know, that they're into it, but maybe they're not ready to come out, so to speak, of understanding what's going on? Cause you get branded, you know, you get branded as being like a tinfoil hat wearing lunatic. And I've gone through all that stuff. And after a while, it doesn't really matter, but still you're trying to grow an audience. You're not trying to send people away, but are there other bands that you guys kind of like interact with out on the road that feel the same way about this stuff?
There are some like people in bands, but there's not many bands that are talking about this kind of thing. Every once in a while, a band will have a song, you know, maybe one song on a record or two songs on a record that are kind of in the vein of what Havoc lyrics are. And I definitely try to pull whoever wrote those lyrics aside and ask, you know, talk to them about some real stuff, because I think it's few and far between that someone's putting their hand in there like, "Hey, I kind of think like you do," because over the last few years, it's really been discouraged to think outside of the box or be someone that's against authoritarianism or ask questions the society has been trained to automatically be like, you're a bad person. But, you know, when I find those people, I definitely seek them out and try to talk to them. And, yeah, man, it's just, I wish there was more of them out there, but a lot of people that think this way don't like to advertise it. And then, like I said earlier, there's these other bands out there that advertise that they're against Nazism and fascism and all these things. And then those were the same people bending over to lick boot and tell people to take the marriage of corporation and state mandated medicine, which is literally what fascism is, Mussolini's definition, telling people to go do that thing, but then singing like, you know, Nazi punks fuck off. It didn't make any sense to me, but I'm like I said, I'm grateful for it. I'm glad to know what the score is now.
For sure. Yeah. Bands like Green Day have embarrassed themselves. I mean, not that they weren't already, but, but they're, you know, we're so punk. I mean, they're just like such corporate punk rock. And, I saw a funny picture of them recently. It was, they were doing something, you know, talking about the vaccines, and the comment on Twitter was like, man, I never imagined that the guys from Green Day would grow up to look like three lesbians. And they did, they look like a bunch of old ladies, and they were singing, they're talking about how everyone's got to get, you know, jabbed up to come to their shows. I, you know, I'd love to say I'm surprised. I'm not, but
yeah, it's sickening. That's something I would never, ever do.
No. But so in your band, though, you guys are sitting around, you're writing songs. I mean, like you said, maybe not everybody is on board with it, but does anybody like push back against it? I mean, what is the dynamic within your band with regard to how we feel about authoritarianism, how we feel about vaccine passports? Like if somebody in your band was like, listen, man, everyone in my family is immunocompromised. I had to get the vaccine. They wanted me to get the vaccine. I'm really in favor of it. Is that something that you could sort of deal with and say, well, listen, you know, to each his own, but like, I'm not into that. We're not going to be doing that as a band, forcing people to get passports and everything. Like, I'm just curious how that would work in a dynamic where one person or maybe two people were at odds with everyone else.
So the situation that you just described basically did happen almost to a T, exactly as you stated it. But yeah, there was times, you know, when I was really going off, this is like right before the jabs had rolled out, and I was just, I'd kept my mouth shut for a long time. And then eventually I just kind of had it. And I was like, dude, what the fuck? No one's saying anything. I felt like I needed to say something, which, you know, maybe that's a pipe dream to think that anyone should pay attention to me. But I was just trying to encourage people to start questioning these things that were happening. You know, we're all locked in our fucking house, and they're like, there's talks of passing these mandatory injections and mandatory, you know, passports for it. Like this could change society as we know it, and everyone's just gonna be okay with this. Like, what the fuck is happening? So I started going off about it, and I kind of didn't shut up about it because I was so fucking angry and concerned, genuinely concerned about what our future looks like collectively. And at one point, I had band members tell me, hey, like, stop talking about this stuff, you know, we're losing fans because you're shooting your mouth off about this shit. And I'm like, If we're losing fans over me being against authoritarianism, well, then fuck those people, because that's literally like what most of the lyrics are about over the last three records. So if they have a problem with me questioning authority and having a problem with tyrants, like why were they fans to begin with? Maybe they tuned out all the lyrics. Good, you know, so be it. But it's really funny also getting pushback from fans just with Havoc lyrics and also me vocalizing these things, which, by the way, I never vocalized them from the band's point of view. I never would go off like on social media pages from the band. It would always be me.
Right.
This is me speaking. I'm not speaking for everybody that's in the group. But it was funny getting pushback from people because I'd have, on one hand, people calling me a like far right extremist, you know, who's really that way. And then at the same time, with the same post, I'd have people telling me that I was a far leftist, like commie socialist. And it's funny to rattle both of those people at the same time. One statement and you get called a leftist and you get called a far right extremist.
It's quite a trick. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that, you know, you just wish that they would have better better put downs or complaints. It's like, you can't call me far. It's not far right to not want authoritarianism. It's, you know, to not want to be forcibly medically injected isn't far anything. It seems like the most reasonable position to have, in fact. And I guess maybe they couldn't deal with that. I don't know, but your fan. So you've got a band dynamic, which has got to be interesting, which I've never had, but it's got to be like, you know, I don't know, start like a small startup company or something where you've got a bunch of people running super hot. My guess is very committed to what you're doing and thinking that you're on the right track. But boy, if you've got five guys in a room, trying to get them to agree on anything is difficult, let alone like a something as important as this. Is that something that's manageable? Can you get out there and say, listen, man, you think whatever you guys, you know, to the drummer, you think what you want to think, man. I don't care. It's not my, you live your life. Like when we hit the stage, we're going to be one. We're going to come together. We're going to blow everyone away. And then afterwards, go do whatever. Do you guys hang out? I mean, do you have that camaraderie, or has there become divisions in it because of some of the, you know, have you been sort of ostracized by the other guys in the band as like, hey man, he's like a loose cannon. We can't do this. Or is it all good in the end when you get on stage?
The way I feel about it is that it's all good. I never cared if people wanted to go and do any of this stuff, knock yourself out. The line that's crossed for me is when you tell me that I have to do it or I will be punished if I don't. And that's literally what happened. So yeah, I was naturally fired up about this stuff, as you and I'm sure most of your listeners were. But yeah, when it comes to all this stuff, like, I don't care if people did it or not, you know, do whatever you want. But you know, the line is really telling me that I have to do it, or forcing anybody to do it. That's, I'm still angry on behalf of all the people that were forced to do it. Like, you either take this thing or you're fired. You know, that's so wrong on so many levels. And I can't believe that people have not gotten the ball suit off of them yet for doing that to people. Same thing happened to me. I work at venues here in Colorado, in Denver. And a lot of them, you know, when these things rolled out, it was, you have to show that you took the stuff or you can't work. And I was like, I literally told them on the phone, well, I'll come back and work when you guys drop all that Nazi bullshit. And they were kind of like, okay. And then, you know, 9 months, a year, something like that went by, and they called me and they were like, hey, you can come back to work now.
We've dropped the Nazi bullshit. Come on back.
Yeah. It's just outrageous. And the whole time with all of it, for me personally, was never, I'm never going to take that. It was, I'm just going to sit back and watch and see what happens. Yeah. And the longer that I waited, the more it was clear, like, I should not do that.
Yeah. You've been doing this for 20 years, right? You've been in Havoc,
yeah,
for 20 years?
Yeah, I started this band when I was 15, and I'm 35 now.
Wow. How has the music industry changed since then? Because I mean, we're talking about like, that would have been the Napster days, right? Right when you started, that would have been all that Metallica lawsuit against Napster, digital music, the starting to the erosion of like buying an album in its entirety and listening to start to finish. And now you've got iTunes starting to sell you songs one at a time, and to me that always felt very, I don't know, maybe just because the way I grew up with it, I like the idea of like the album starts with the first song and it ends with the last song. I don't want to buy song 3, 7, and 9, and like I you know, and I want them, in the order that they're in, I feel is important to me. I think it was probably important to the band, so it should be important to me. The way I listen to this, the way I hear it, maybe it's in a specific order for a reason. Like, how did, from your growing up listening to albums and everything, and then you get into this business, and now all of a sudden the business model has flipped, where it's now fully digital, and who knows if you can even make any money doing this. Like, how have you seen things go in the last 20 years since the music industry has been flipped on its head?
I think there's positive and negative things to what has happened in the last couple decades. On the positive, recording technology is a lot more accessible, and there's a lot more information out there available to people to learn how to record things properly and mix things better. And, there's these platforms, these digital service providers where you can give them your music and they can put it out on iTunes and Amazon and Spotify and YouTube and all these places to get your stuff out there. So being an independent artist or someone that's just starting out trying to get your sonic art out there, this is a great time to be an artist. On the flip side, those things don't really pay as much, and a lot of people have shorter attention spans, and there's so much saturation in the market that it's harder to elbow other artists out to get someone's attention. And I mean, this was even the case kind of when my band started and we were, just getting going. You could argue that things would have been much better if we had been 20 years older and came out 2 decades earlier. I probably would have made a lot more money because people had to buy records. They couldn't go right and listen to it online. And there was no MySpace, there was no Facebook, there was no YouTube back then. So if someone got into a band, they had to go see them live, or they had to go to a record store and buy a physical thing. There was no such thing as Spotify. So, but on the flip side, there's recording an album back in the 80s would have costed a fortune. You would have had to go into a very legit studio and pay someone, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars to cut a good sounding album. So I think there's pros and cons to all of it. There's, no different than when we look at just when people used to grow their own food and be cattle ranchers and stuff. One could argue that was better than what we have today. But on the flip side, we're having this conversation remotely on some the Star Trek level technology that we all carry a supercomputer in our pocket. That's, this big. I don't know how the music industry has changed on a touring level, though, is pretty minimal. The only big thing that I notice is back when we first started out, venues were not taking merch cuts. And for people that don't know, merch cuts, basically the band shows up and we're essentially glorified t-shirt salesmen. We get up on stage to play the jingle to get you to buy the merch, to buy the shirts. Right. And a lot of venues nowadays will take a cut of your sales for that night, which, in my opinion, is wrong on every level. We show up, we spend the money to get there, we rehearse this music to perform it live, and then it costs money to make the shirts. Then we pay someone to sell the shirts and transport the shirts. And then once we make a little bit of money with that, the venue comes in and says, okay, we'll take a 10 or 15% of the gross. So, if the cost of goods is half of what we're selling it for, and they're asking for 10 or 15% of the gross, they're essentially taking 20 or 30% of the profit from the band. That's something new that was not really a thing 20 years ago.
So There's more hands in the cookie jar, so to speak. Yeah, for sure. And we've started to see that with these 360 deals that the record labels are doing. They're saying, we'll manage your album and your tour and your merch and your online presence and all that stuff. And people go, oh, that sounds great. You're going to do it all for me? You're going to fuck me on every 360 degrees? Fantastic. What could possibly go wrong, right? And so you wind up in these deals and then you're some band that's stuck in a shitty deal forever and you can't get out of it. So did you guys have, what's your relationship with record companies? Do you not need them anymore? Are they a necessary evil? Can they help you? Can you use them in certain places? Like maybe you use one in Europe, they're helpful, but you don't do it in the US. Like, how does all that stuff work?
So at this point, I think that record labels can largely be bypassed because you have a lot more direct access to your audience via the internet. This is one of the good things. On the flip side of that, though, I think, and maybe this is less the case than it was previously, but record labels traditionally have been a good way to like get a foot in the door. Like, I'm grateful that we had a record label when we, signed our first deal in 2008, I think, and put out our first record in 2009. The record label is kind of like a stamp of legitimacy on your project. Yeah. It allows you to more easily, not saying this is impossible, but more easily get a booking agent, more easily get onto tours with other like bigger bands. And it just like kind of makes it official that your band is somewhat good enough for a record label to like you. So maybe fans should listen to you. Right. I think it might be less important than it was today. But essentially, record labels are basically like the pimp and the bands are like the prostitute. The bands go out there and eat shit on the road and sleep like crap, eat like crap, break their bodies, put all the blood, sweat, and tears into the project, and bust their ass to make it get off of the ground. And then when it comes to that band's music being successful and getting streams and selling albums and selling CDs and all that kind of stuff, the pimp, the record label, comes in after all that band's hard work and says, give me most of the money now. And it's been that way since like recording was invented. It's literally like some gang shit. It is just mafia style stuff. And it's still that way. But yeah, I view record label and band relations a lot like a pimp and whore situation. You know, the band has to go out there and eat all the, gross stuff, and the pimp gets all the money.
I remember reading about the record deal that Incubus signed, and it was like the worst deal ever. And someone broke it down and they said that like it was some like 8 albums or I don't know what they said. Okay, we did the math on it and it was essentially like everybody in the band making $132,000 each a year for the next 20 years, which sounds like a lot of money, I guess. But when you're a band that's on the radio all the time, and this was back, I don't know, late 90s or early 2000s, when you just want to, you go, who the fuck was your manager that signed you up to this crappy deal? Like, this is insane. Do you know bands that are like trapped in record deals that they can't get out of? I mean, is that a thing that you can wind, or is that just sort of nobody steps in those traps anymore after knowing what they know about the industry?
I mean, there's so much more information available today that I would imagine bands step into those traps less frequently, but I mean, back in my personal experiences, some things that were signed, I wish hadn't been, just because it probably would have been possible to negotiate something better. However, we were advised, and this happens to all kinds of bands, and I think this is very common, that your lawyer or your manager or whatever will just say like, this is the industry standard. So bands will say like, oh, well, I guess I'll just go with that. And unfortunately, they're not lying to you. They're telling you the truth. The industry standard was set up by mafia and gangster people. You know, this is the industry standard is you basically get screwed over. So, you know, what's a band to do, especially if you're signing like your first deal and you kind of need the label more than they need you? This is it puts artists in a tricky position. And another thing is a lot of these legal documents and contracts and things are kind of created in a confusing way. And the music industry is built in, I think, an intentionally convoluted and mysterious way to where it's confusing. So that artists say, oh, I'm just going to hire a lawyer, manager, whatever, to sort this out for me. And, you know, however they present it as the best way, that's just must be what it is, because I'm an artist. I want to write songs and sing and play guitar, play drums and go on tour and play shows. I'm not here to juggle all the legalese in these documents. So I'm going to outsource that to somebody else that has been here for a long time and understands how this all works. I think the music industry and the way it operates is intentionally confusing so that artists can get screwed over easier. Nowadays, there's so many resources, though, it's a lot easier to avoid those pitfalls, I think.
I saw this interesting interview with Duff McKagan, formerly of Guns N' Roses, Audioslave.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about a conversation he had with Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age. Josh and I have known each other forever. I've known him for 45 years. We grew up together.
Cool.
And he's saying that these two guys were having this very intense conversation one night, and people were like, I wonder what they're talking about. And he's like, well, what we were talking about was when you're on the road and your tour bus needs to fill up.
Yo, sorry, my internet.
No problem, man. I thought, no sweat.
So they were talking about
being on tour and where you would go to get gas. Like they were saying, don't go get gas in this state. Go and get gas in this other state because they don't have state taxes and therefore it's cheaper to fill up and all this stuff. And I remember thinking, that's so wild, man, that like you're in a band and you're trying to think about all these other things. And like,
I think it's funny that, you know, there's all these things these guys could be talking about.
Yeah. And instead you're talking about gasoline prices for your band, you know, for your tour bus, because it costs a lot of money to fill it up and you got a bunch of buses and, you know, and they were saying, well, you definitely don't fill up. If you're playing in this town, you definitely don't fill up in that because you're close to the state line. You'd cross over into the other state line and make sure you filled up there because the taxes were lower and that was going to be cheaper for your cost. And I thought that was a very insightful comment that Duff was making, but also like the fact that you have to even think about that at all is wild to me. But I guess you're running a business, right?
Queens of the Stone Age. Yeah. When you're playing Queens of the Stone Age and Guns N' Roses, that is surprising that you're worried about the gas bill.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You're worried about the gas. But in the end, you know, when you're out on tour, you're essentially running your own small business, right? I mean, you have to keep these things in mind. You have to know where you're going to be staying and what the costs are associated with that and travel and food and factor all this stuff in. And for people that maybe come into this industry as musicians, I want to play music. That's what I love. I don't want to focus on that other stuff. It's not my strong suit. You either force yourself to do that or you have to outsource that to somebody else. And if you outsource it to somebody else, then now you're in a position of hoping or trusting that they're going to do it the right way. And if they're not, that could put you in a bad situation, right? So have you been kind of forced into the position of businessman, even if you didn't really want to be?
Yeah, I didn't ever really want to be, but I've been that guy in the band. And most bands have at least one guy that's the guy that kind of does all the behind the scenes stuff that nobody else wants to do. Most bands have that person. I am that guy by default. I'm the only original member. There's been other guys that have been in the band for a very, very long time, but I was in the band, like I said, since I was 15. So by default, I've become that guy. And, you know, it has its, there's not many perks to it. We'll put it that way.
But it's
more just like busy work that you don't get paid for. It's like doing homework all the time at school. You know, you're not. Yeah,
but that's an important part of the band, right? I mean, you got to, if you're not.
It's crucial.
If you're not keeping an eye on the finances and the money and all of that, then you're going to be in a bad spot. Where is the money in these days in bands? Is it out on the road? Is it, you mentioned merch. Is it merch? Is it, can't be downloads, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's mostly touring. Touring is essentially where bands are making their money these days. So if there's a band that you really love and you want to go support them, definitely go to their show if they're coming into a town near you. And it really helps the bands a lot when you buy a t-shirt or a hoodie or a hat or a patch or sticker or a beer koozie or whatever. That kind of stuff helps bands more than listening to them on Spotify all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of these streaming platforms just pay garbage, notoriously. I think Spotify pays like 0.0004 cents per stream. It's horrendous. Like, millions and millions of streams will rack up to like hundreds of dollars.
I gotta say, you guys, vinyl albums are making a comeback, and your vinyl albums are killer looking. Where did you get the, like, who did that for you? Because I took a look at it and was like that. Almost, frankly, almost too nice to even want to play. Like, they're more like art than the the music itself. But vinyl albums, is that the new thing?
Yeah, buying vinyl also helps bands a lot. But this is a situation where if that band is signed onto a record label, it's not going to help the band themselves as much as buying a t-shirt would. The record label is going to be really happy that you bought a vinyl. But there's a lot of these bands doing it, ourselves included, nowadays with vinyl records. There's so many color variations that you can do. And you can get really creative with what the actual wax looks like. And yeah, that's fun. We try to do things that match the album artwork colors and things like that. And a lot of people do buy them and literally just display them. They never play them because they'll just listen to it on Spotify or YouTube or whatever and just have the vinyl, you know, half pulled out of the album sleeve and like frame it and put it on the wall.
Yeah.
I've got some vinyls that are like that. Where I don't ever really plan on playing them. They were just beautiful, and I wanted to support the band and have that piece of merch.
I stayed at a hotel in up in Fort Collins like last year for the night, and it was this funky little hotel. We thought it was really neat, and we got up to our room, and every room had a record player in it. And then if you went down to the lobby, they had like a massive record library, and you could just take whatever record you want. I was like, I'm like, I don't think I've listened to an actual vinyl record in at least 30 years. And so I mean, it was funny I must've felt like a college kid. I was like, all right, now how the fuck does this thing work again? I'm trying to put it all on. Like, this is really not the most efficient way to listen to music, but it's pretty cool. You know? So I what's old is new again, I guess. So vinyl is making a comeback. Anyone wants to get that havocband.com, go on the website, buy some merch, support the show, support the band, for God's sake. Talk to me about a European tour. What does a European tour look like? Is that it? Cause on the outside looking in, it sounds like it's a lot of fun. Something tells me that once you're at the last couple of gigs, you're like ready to get home and get off the road. Is that, but then again, that's your moneymaker. That's your business where you're out there on the road. So what's your relationship with tour life, especially when it comes to like a, you know, like a place like a European tour?
It's fun work. Mm. It's still work for sure. But going to places that are more exotic than the U.S., not that the U.S. isn't awesome. This is an amazing country. People take it for granted how cool the U.S. is. You can go from the Pacific to the Atlantic without showing a passport to anybody, and it'll take you 3,000 miles on the highway to get there. You can't say that for anywhere else other than Canada. But Canada is not as cool as the U.S. We have some amazing stuff here. But a European tour is typically very interesting because everyone speaks different languages in almost every city that you're going to. You know, it's not like the U.S. in that way. There's different cultures, different languages, and, you know, different foods and beers and culture. In that regard, it's really cool. And I mean, it's an ancient place. You see churches that are older than America by hundreds or thousands of years on a regular basis. It's really something special to go over there and to get to play music, have music paying for it. It is amazing. I've been to Europe probably now like, I don't know, 10 times or something on tour. And some of the, you were asking about like the end of the tour coming, if I'm ready to go home, like Not really. Because it's special. Every time I go to places like that, I pretty much treat it like it is could be the last time I'm ever seeing any of this stuff. So I try to take advantage of it and go out for walks and sightsee when we're in any town and try some special local dish I've never had before. And, you know, COVID really, well, not COVID, but the lockdown times, you know, really put this stuff into perspective extra hard. Like, I'm absolutely going to treat this all like it's the last time I'm ever going to be there, because it literally could be. You know, in 2020, I was fully prepared. Like, I had mentally already gone there. Like, I might never play another show again. I might never tour again. And that's all right. I was totally ready to just never have the old life way of life back again. And the fact that things have opened back up, you know, to anybody that does want to travel, I encourage you to go do it, because who knows when the next thing is going to come around and they're going to do it all over again. I fully expect them to rear their ugly head again with all that authoritarian bullshit.
Yeah.
So yeah, traveling though is a great time. I don't really look forward to going home as much as other people do. Some people like being home more. I guess that's changed slightly for me in the last few years, because now I have a girlfriend. I was always single, so yeah. I was always happy to be on tour and had nothing super crucial to look forward to at home. I was happy to be gone, but yeah, touring is a lot of hard work. I think people don't understand that. You beat up your body real good and sleep and eat like crap, and bands sacrifice a lot to be out there. You know, you're seeing your a band that you like playing your town, and you're like, oh, these guys are so lucky. On the flip side of that, yes, okay, they are. We are very lucky to get to do this. For a lot of people that do, it's their dream life. But the sacrifice involved, a lot of people don't put that into perspective. These people are leaving their significant other behind. They're leaving behind some more stable work or job that they could be working. They're missing all the cool shows that are coming through their town because they're out on the road to make the show for someone else. And, you know, especially bands that are on a smaller scale and more, you know, independent and more underground, often you're touring in a van. You know, you're not comfortable. You're in tight quarters with a bunch of stinky, farty dudes for a long time, weeks on end. And there's a lot that goes into it. And I guess I'm only mentioning it so that people, when they go see a live band, they can maybe consider that. Like, these guys have sacrificed so much stuff to bring me this 30 or 90 minutes of live music.
What's the festival vibe like? Is that where you guys get to really kind of meet and interact with other bands and kind of get to know each other and sort of network and do all that stuff and talk about, hey, you know, you should go to play this place or don't play this venue or stay away from that guy, or hey, I got a good guy who's a good touring booker for you or something. I mean, is that where all that goes on? I mean, my assumption is that it's got to be a hell of a lot of fun to play those festivals when you've got, you know, a massive audience. And by the way, what's the biggest crowd you've played in front of?
I think we probably played in front of 35,000 people in Bogota, Colombia.
Oh, that's a lot of people.
Yeah. There's an ocean of bodies. But yeah, at festivals, you get to meet a lot of bands that maybe you've never gotten a chance to meet before, but they're backstage at the catering place. And like, you both are standing in line to get some green beans and chicken breast or whatever for the day. And the festivals are cool because there's tons of people, but they're also huge bills that with tons of bands. So it's not like a normal show that you're playing at a theater where even if you're linking up with other bands in the middle of their tour and your tours combine or whatever, traditionally you'll play with anywhere from one other band to maybe four or five other bands. But on those festivals, some of those days are stacked with, like, you know, 65 bands or something. So it's really fun to play those and be a music fan, because you also get to see tons of other bands that you love. And you might run into them backstage and stuff like that. But the festivals sometimes are a little stressful because sometimes you need to be there at like 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. And, you know, sometimes you're not playing at your normal time, you know, somewhere between 7 and 10 o'clock in the evening, you're playing at 1 p.m. And so you're pretty like, you know, slumped over and not ready to do it, but you just start running on adrenaline at that point.
You got to play a day game every now and then, right? That'd be kind of
fun. Oh yeah, big time.
That'd be kind of fun to do. What's your favorite country to play? Like I've heard that there's certain countries that it's like every time I go, people are the best. They love us. They love the music. They're very supportive. Is there a country that stands out for you?
The best countries to play, I think, for metal bands are all in South America. The people in Latin American countries go absolutely berserk when metal bands play down there. They will sing the guitar riffs and the melodies like as an entire crowd. They'll sing it and like they're just rowdy. And I think part of it is because bands don't get down there all that often. So when bands do go down, everyone shows up because that band might never be there again.
Yeah.
So playing shows, I think in South America is the best, but as far as like countries to tour in, I really enjoyed going to Japan and like Switzerland and Iceland. There's a lot of cool places out there in the world.
I just got back from Tokyo last week. I had never been, and
awesome.
Part of it was what you were saying was, I understand that they're probably going to lock things down at some point for some stupid reason. And if I have an opportunity to go, I should probably take advantage of it now instead of like saying, oh, well, it'll always be there. Well, what if it's not always going to be there? And I had an opportunity to go with a bunch of my friends from that I, you know, like my post-college friends. And I was really impressed with Japan. I really enjoyed the people. I thought the place ran. It was very well organized and everything was fantastic. I've heard nothing but good things about, you know, bands having relationships there. I hear Noel Gallagher get in there and talk about, he's like, the fucking Japanese are the best. We love them. I'll go anytime you want. You know, the people are so nice. As soon as we get off the airplane, it's like first class service and all this stuff. He's, you know, so I was sort of predisposed to like it before I got there. I have no musical sort of interest or anything like that, but just the people itself. And I was blown away. It's good to hear that they're metalheads too, but I'm not surprised really. They're into sort of non-traditional stuff too. I mean, if you walk around there, you see the outfits they're wearing. Good Lord.
Yeah. So you were just out in Japan. Were you, did you ever link up with James Corbett? Cause I know he lives out there and I've seen him on your podcast.
I would have loved to. Yeah. I wasn't in a position where I could deviate from our group, and we were only there for a couple of days. If I'd had additional days, I would have gone to find James in Japan. I've met him in Mexico at Anarcapulco and done some shows with him.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's one of those guys that is fantastic, and he's accurate, and he's early. So when you're early, you always seem a little bit crazy. So people thought, oh, that James Corbett, he's a little crazy. Early to it. What in the alternative media? What do you like? Who do you listen to? What are you into?
I tell people about James Corbett all the time because one of my favorite things is he cites all of his sources. If you're like, oh, that's bullshit, that's not real, like, there's the link with the proof to what he's talking about. That's important because it's not a lot of editorializing and just, you know, being a talking head. He's relaying actual information to his audience. He's a huge one for me. But also, even though he's not like a journalist or anything, somebody that really cracked my eyes open to the way the world works is George Carlin.
Likewise.
You know, he's stand-up philosopher. I love Carlin. He really woke me up. I love G. Edward Griffin. I listen to you, especially on the Union of the Unwanted stuff when you're talking with the tinfoil hat guys and like the Ben Swans of the world and people like this. That these are all great resources. I love what you do, and I really appreciate your perspective. And anybody that's doing something in the vein of what you do, I admire and respect the hell out of, because more people need to hear these things. And, you know, this is where we really, as artists or as podcasters or people that are advertising these kinds of ideas, I think it's really important, because if we don't and we all shut up, no one thinks about this kind of shit, and their heads are just get pumped full of whatever corporate media wants them to be listening to. And what, you know, there's there's a song that we have called Intention to Deceive. And it says, I'll tell you what you need to hear. I'll show you what I want you to see. And this would be the case without independent journalists and, you know, independent voices and artists and things like this talking about shit that's outside of the norm. It's necessary. It's absolutely vital to our survival as a species, I think, at this point.
Yeah. What's next for the band?
Well, we're going to do a short tour in the Midwest on our way to a big festival in Milwaukee called Milwaukee Metal Fest. We're doing some shows on the way there and back. And then in June, we're hitting South America, going from Mexico all the way down to like Chile and Argentina. And then we play a festival in Canada in July, and then we go to Europe in August. And beyond that, I think we're going to round out the year with another US tour or North American tour. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of things going on this year. And we're going to have some new music coming out later this year as well. It'll be a new EP, and not sure which month that'll come out, but this will be the first time that we're releasing something independently, not on a label. So this is going to be a really cool experiment. Nice. and kind of a big deal for me to kind of, you know, throw off the shackles and do our own thing.
Right on.
And anybody that wants to look up the band, you definitely look for Havok with a K, H-A-V-O-K. We all went to public school, so we spelled it very wrong.
We're calling them government schools these days so that they sound extra bad when we describe it. That's David Sanchez, everybody. You can find it, Havok Band with a K, because they don't know how to spell, because they got that common course education that they went through. But support them on the road. Buy some merch. Share their music with people that you think might be interested in it. David, you're the best. Thanks for coming on. And if any of you want to connect with me, the website, macroaggressions.io, is the best place to do it. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you again soon.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Moto Casino. America's
social casino. COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.